Well, on the way here, oh, this is Srimad Bhagavatam. On the way here, we stumbled across a subject. See how much devotees respond to that. And this is our famous Chaturvarnyam Shloka. Gita Krishna talks about many things, and of the five topics, one is karma. And karma isn't just a karmic reaction, as we sometimes use the word karma, but karma also means work, because you only get reaction to the work that you do. And that work may be, Krishna describes three kinds of karma. Karma, akarma, vikarma. Prescribed activities, forbidden activities, reactionless activities. But particularly this karma, vikarma, they all have their results. And even prescribed activities, pious activities, even they have their reaction. And ultimately the whole business is to become free from the reaction to work. And in the 14th chapter of the Gita, Krishna explains that you become free from the reaction of the work by knowing how to work. So by learning how to work in a religious way, in a dharmic way, then one gradually becomes se karmani of hirata. In other words, and religious work means that one does one's own work. Ultimately one becomes free from the reaction to work, karmic reaction. By becoming free from karmic reaction, then the heart becomes purified, and gradually through the purification of the heart, then one can come to the spiritual platform. And through all this, one continues to work. The whole thrust of Bhagavad Gita is that Krishna wants Arjuna to fight, which is pretty extraordinary work, but it's described in the second chapter in the purport. Srila Prabhupada points out that for a Kshatriya, even fighting is equivalent to a Brahmin performing yajna, performing sacrifice. So it's also prescribed work. And in describing how to work, Krishna talks about Varnashrama. Although, actually, he doesn't talk about Varnashrama. He only talks about Varna. He doesn't talk about Ashrama. If you read Bhagavad Gita, Krishna doesn't mention the word in the entire book. But he certainly mentions the concept of working karma repeatedly. And talks about performing one's duty as well. So here in the verse that Srila Prabhupada will elaborate on and comment on the concept of varna-ashram. Krishna is only emphasizing varna. Ashram is already understood, so in that sense varna-ashram is already there. So you know, the brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. So this is civilization. Civilization means you're in one of these. There's no in between. There's no bachelor's. There's no ladies equivalent of a bachelor. Someone is always in one type of ashram. And that again is, it gives a sense of identity. And a sense of identity because ashrams are identified. They have their characteristics. They have the duties that you're meant to perform in them, the responsibilities, and then what rights you can enjoy. So you can't have rights without responsibility, and you can't be held responsible without having rights. And you can't have either rights or responsibility for something that's not defined by Shastra. So because there's no such thing as a bachelor in Shastra, therefore bachelors have no rights. So when we talk about outcasts, outcasts are people who just don't fit in. They're in some type of ashram that is not defined, so therefore they're out, they're outcasts. And in Vedic society they have no rights. Or at least they have very, very minimal rights. But here in the verse, Chaturvaryam Mayashisham Guna Karma Vibhagasha Tasya Kartaram Apimam Vidya Kartaram Apimam. According to the three modes of material nature and the work associated with them, the four divisions of human society are created by me. And although I am the creator of this system, you should know that I'm a non-doer, being unchangeable. So there's two real philosophical points in this verse. The second part of the verse relates to really Krishna as being the akartara, the non-doer, which is important, because often people state that if God is responsible for our deeds. He's responsible for what goes on in the universe. He's responsible for the activities or actions of the universe. This second part of the shloka explains that no, he's not. He's akartara. He's not involved. Akartara, I didn't do anything. And that's a separate issue from the varna-ashram issue, and that's the one that we're here concentrating on. So the first part says, according to the three modes of material nature and the work associated with them, the four divisions of human society are created by me. Purport. The Lord is the creator of everything. Everything is born of him. Everything is sustained by him. And everything after annihilation rests in him. He is therefore the creation of the four divisions of the social order, beginning with the intelligent class of men, technically called Brahmins, due to their being situated in the mode of goodness. Next is the administrative class, technically called the Kshatriyas, due to their being situated in the mode of passion. The mercantile men, called the Vaishyas, are situated in the mixed modes of passion and ignorance. And the Shudras, or labor class, are situated in the ignorant mode of material nature. In spite of his creating the four divisions of human society, Lord Krishna does not belong to any of these divisions, because he is not one of the conditioned souls, a section of whom form human society. Human society is similar to any other animal society, but to elevate men from the animal status, the above-mentioned divisions are created by the Lord for the systematic development of Krishna consciousness. The tendency of a particular man towards work is determined by the modes of nature which he has acquired. Such symptoms of life, according to the different modes of material nature, are described in the 18th chapter of this book. A person in Krishna consciousness, however, is above even the Brahmins. Although Brahmins by quality are supposed to know about Brahman, the Supreme Absolute Truth, most of them approach only the impersonal Brahman manifestation of Lord Krishna. But a man who transcends the limited knowledge of a Brahmana and reaches the knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, becomes a person in Krishna consciousness, or in other words, a Vaishnava. Krishna consciousness includes knowledge of all different planetary expanses of Krishna, namely Lara, Nishinga, Varaha, etc. And as Krishna is transcendental to the system of the four divisions of human society, a person is also Krishna consciousness, is also transcendental to all divisions of human society, whether we consider the divisions of community, nation, or species. So, I'm going to start with the last part of this purport. And as you can see here, although we often talk about Varnashrama here, Krishna is speaking only about Varna. And then later on in the 18th chapter, again, he only speaks about Varna. He doesn't mention the concept of Ashrama, although the conception is obviously there, described in Srimad Bhagavatam in depth. However, the emphasis here is given on work. And here in the latter part of the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions a very interesting concept, which is misrepresented ad infinitum in our Krishna consciousness movement. And that is this Srila Prabhupada statement that a Vaishnava is above Varnashrama. Which must be true because Prabhupada said it. The question is, who's a Vaishnava? And who is it that's above practicing or executing particular duties? The concept of a Vaishnava, in other words, that a Vaishnava is someone who is situated in his identity as the servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and is acting to serve and please only Krishna, is the concept of a spiritually or transcendentally situated person. And such a person, he's above the identification with a particular type of Varna, whether it be Brahmin or Kshatriya or Vaishya or Shudra. And yet, then Krishna says, Yajada Acharati Srisar Stapta David Swaraj Janaha. Yet still, he takes responsibility and works in some particular situation in society for different reasons. One is to set an example for those who are not transcendentally situated. And the other, because that's how society functions. Society doesn't, there is no such thing as society when everyone's transcendentally situated. So in Satya Yuga, everyone was a Paramahansa, which meant that there was no society. And nothing got done. Everyone just sat around meditating, because that's all Paramahansas do. They have nothing to do. They're all situated in the mode of goodness. So there becomes no social structure. So Krishna makes the same point that Uchadeira me lokana kurya karma chedaham shankarasya chakarasya upaha. He says, if I don't act, then everyone's going to follow my example. In other words, natasya karyam. Krishna has nothing to do. But just because Krishna has nothing to do, if he does nothing, no one will do anything. And if no one does anything, nothing will happen. Which means that it will starve to death. Because if you don't work, you don't eat. And if you don't eat, you don't live. You can't function in this world. So, therefore, Krishna also takes the role of a Vaishya, and then later on of a Kshatriya, although he's also speaking Bhagavad Gita, so he takes the role of a Shudra and Shishupala, of a Brahmana. So Shishupala later on, he criticizes that you can't even know what kind of Varna he's in. He's like, sometimes he's a Brahmin, sometimes he's a Kshatriya, sometimes he's a Vaishya. What is he? And he's married, and yet he called a Brahmachari. And Tapan Upanishad said he's a Brahmachari, so it's really hard to even know what ashram Krishna's in. But anyway, but that's Krishna. But we're not like Krishna, and even though from that type of analysis, Krishna may be very tricky to sort of point down, because he says, Tasya Akara Param, if you really want to study where I am, you find that I don't identify with any of these things. I can do everything. I can be a brahmachari and have 16,000 wives. I can speak Bhagavad Gita and herd cows. So he can do anything. But still, objectively, Krishna says, but yes, if I don't set the example, if I don't take some particular role, then no one will. And therefore, Vaishnavas, even if they're transcendentally situated, but who are the Vaishnavas that are transcendentally situated? So those who are actually free from the influence of modes of material nature. So here is stated, Chaturmayama Shishtam Guna Karma. But one should then recognize, Vaishnavas should see, am I free from the influence of modes of material nature? And if someone is not free from the modes of material nature, then it should be very clear, what is the mode of material nature that is predominant on me? And then one should act accordingly. One should have a particular type of karma. One should adopt a specific karma. And this concept of work is, it's, you see, that Krishna really emphasizes not only work, but he emphasizes duty in the Bhagavad Gita. It's a, in this country, particularly since, when did this welfare study come in? After the Second World War? Is that when they introduced the welfare system?
Yeah.
I think so. So, what we have here, and what for most part, even your generation, even my generation, although I'm not from the UK, have lost the whole sense of value or the ethics of work. And therefore you get so many people who are on the dole, who are taking benefits, and everyone knows that it's a cheating system. In other words, people, to get out of work, just collect money from the government, which means from those few people who do work. And technically, in a normal society, this is adharmic, this is irreligious. And it just leads to further, if you perform some type of irreligious activity, you become more irreligious. Why? Because in every society, one thing that's common to people is that people are, well, we have this word, they're craftsmen. They have skills. They're proud of what they do. In India, the Brahmins are proud of being Brahmins, therefore they're called Chovedi, Trivedi, Chaturvedi. The type of work that they do is already Purohit, Panditji, is already inherent within their name. Even in this country, who's a smith? A smith is a blacksmith. So who's a tailor? A tailor is someone who used to stitch clothes. And all of these names were related to work. So with Peter Smith, it would be in this village, the Peter who's the blacksmith, that was his name. We identified people by the type of work that they did, and people took really great, they took great pride in working and in the quality and the type of work that they did. This is really very much abused, particularly in this country. This whole welfare system has bred generations of people for whom the ethic is not working, but getting out of work. And that means that people lose their sense of self-esteem. They lose their self-respect. And more or less, they just degrade down into the mode of ignorance, or lower, well, mode of ignorance, low mode of ignorance. So who are people who are on the dole? They're people who sniff glue, take drugs, hang around, do nothing, because that's the result. Well, what else are you going to do? You got to do something. So if you're not working, what are you going to do with yourself? Then you get into all kinds of sinful, illicit activities. So, inertia breeds adharma, irreligion, and irreligion just breeds further irreligious activities, and as that spreads, society becomes corrupted. And that becomes a major problem. For instance, in the 1950s, about 50 years ago, the principle of retirement and pension was based upon the fact that there were, for every retiree, there were 12 workers. Now, for every retiree, there's only 5 workers. And if it goes on like this for another 50 years, like this means that you have a negative growth rate. In other words, more people are dying than are taking birth. So your workforce shrinks. And less people are working anyway because they're doing so many other things. So you probably just end up having 3 people, which means that the whole pension scheme doesn't work. So what does government do? Retirement used to be at 65, now they put it off to 67, then they'll put it off to 70, which is a joke. For instance, in Hungary, the retirement age now is 67, and in about 3-4 years it'll go to 70. However, the average death for males, because women live 10 years more than men do on an average, for good reasons, and is only 63. So the average person's already dead before he can collect his pension. What to speak of being dead? It's like only after 5 years you're dead that you have any right to your pension. So anyway, it's all cheating. It's a joke. And even if you do get your pension, it becomes poverty line. You live on poverty. That's what most, for the average person, with devaluation of money, etc., etc., then by the time you collect your pension, if you've just been a blue-collar worker or something, you're living on what's called poverty line. If you're very wealthy, that's something else, but that's a few people who are like that. Anyway, back to the whole concept of work. So people have to work. And Vaishnavas also have to work. And Vaishnavas need to evaluate or establish just exactly what work is suitable for them. And you read this many times in Srila Prabhupada's books, in the Guru system, how did it work that for 20 years, Brahmachari Guru Kule Vasadanto Guru Rita, the 20 years you learn how to live selflessly, you give everything to Guru, you go out every day, you beg, whatever you beg, you give. If you're called to eat, you eat. If you don't call to eat, you don't eat. That's Brahmacharya. And then after 20 years, and at 25 years of age, then in consultation with Guru, then that person decides, do you continue living like that? Or do you then become a, in the Srila Prabhupada calls it a householder. In Prabhupada's person, in other words, that at 25 years, the brahmacharya can get married, and then he can live outside the ashram, he works, and then what's he meant to do? Then he's supposed to give 50% of his income. It's black and white, there's no argument. You get 50%. Who was it that told me? I think Dev Amrita Maharaj told me just recently that he was, when he was on the farm for Prabhupada's disappearance. Anyway, he was talking about Dhyananda Prabhu, who was Prabhupada's disciple. He's been working for IBM, I don't know, for like 30 years or something like that. And he was also the first president of Los Angeles. And so Prabhupada had just come back, and he was working also. So Prabhupada had just come back from, was coming to the temple, and he saw him, and called him over, and said, so what are you doing? He said, Prabhupada, I'm working. And Prabhupada just turned to him and he said, are you giving 50%? And then it just went up. So that was the idea, then the Grihastha then works. But then we see what Srila Prabhupada did is not only he also gave the opportunity for Grihasthas to continue on like they did as Brahmacharis. In other words, that they may get married, they may have family, but they may continue on in a dependent position upon the institution, not an independent situation, doing similar type of work, distributing books, chanting Hare Krishna, cooking, preaching, worshipping the deity, but Srila Prabhupada said they should just get basic maintenance. They don't get salaries, they don't get any type of fixed income, and they live like, more or less like brahmacharis. So here it says, guna karma vipadasa, guna. What's your nature? So Srila Prabhupada said, yes, at 25 years of age, someone should then decide, do I remain in a dependent position, or if do I become independent? Guna karma, and then you take an appropriate karma. If someone, his guna, if his nature is to remain, yes, I'll just continue on as a full-time preacher, a full-time servant of the institution of ISKCON, then that's fine. But then, and you do the appropriate activities, but you have to have the guna for that. You have to have the nature for that. And if you have the nature, then you have the right to do that type of work. And nature here also means a certain type of consciousness. So the consciousness is that I'm just dependent on what Krishna gave us, and I'm happy to live by that Krishna through the agency of the society. And if that isn't satisfactory, or if one's guna or consciousness is different, that I want to be independent, then one does a different type of karma. Then one works for IBM, or one gets some type of job, and then by one's work, then one serves the mission and one gives 50%. You're happy if they give 10 generally, but that's the idea. In this way, but everyone should be satisfied in the work that they do, and everyone should have integrity, pride in the work that they do, and that work should be connected to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. One should continue to work. And then, as I mentioned earlier, according to the work that you do, then, and according to your nature, according to your commitment, then one has a certain right, and you have rights, and you also have obligation. For instance, then someone who's a supporter, let's use this word, a congregation member who's living outside of the king, then he more or less determines his own time, manages his own energies, but then his obligation is that he should give the results of his work to Krishna. However, he shouldn't demand anything. Very often there's this confusion we see with devotees. Devotees live outside, they maintain themselves, they work, they do different things, sell paintings or do business or so on. And yet they expect the society to have some type of obligation for them. I did 10 years of sankirtan, and therefore I should be, my need should be met by the society. But no, the society's obligation is not based on the past, it's based on the present. And it's based on what we're doing at the present time. We can't live or judge things according to what happened in the past. In the past was the present at one time, and I had rights in the past according to that type of work that you did. So when you did 10 years sankirtan, then what did you do? Then the temple took care of everything. Your whole life was organized, the counseling was taken care of, all one's personal needs were set up, and that was life at that time. But when I become an independent personality, when I take responsibility for myself, then I can't hold anyone else responsible just for the past. Then I'm responsible for all of those things. And if I succeed or not succeed, it's not the responsibility of the society to follow up or fill in for some kind of defect or insufficiency I have either in my family life, in my home, in my work, and whatever else. So, rights and obligations. And then, and I particularly like that if one is a full-time devotee. Then when he's a full-time devotee, full-time means really full-time. He's like brahmacharis at the beck and call of the needs of the society. And that's what's expected of him. And in return, then society more or less just takes full responsibility for that person. Your health, your dental care, whatever else is required. You give everything. Then ISKCON takes responsibility. But if at a certain point one decides, I'm not giving everything, I'm independent, and I will voluntarily give as much as I can, then the society at that point no longer has full responsibility, but rather its main function at that time is just to be a recipient and to be a place where others can come and get shelter and solace for their spiritual practices.